Well, it is that time of year, December, just days away. Some people have already begun listening to Christmas music, and as we were saying earlier, it seems there are two camps, those who love it and those who detest it, but we offer another choice with our friend Colin Fleming, who joins us to say that not all Christmas music is intolerable, even for those who find it insufferable. There's actually some good music to be found out there.
Quite a bit. Not all Christmas music is created equal, my friend. Not at all.
No question about that. And we want to look at four different artists and their efforts along the way. And let's start. Do we want to play a little of this, Carrie? Can we start with the 60th anniversary of Ella Fitzgerald and a little Christmas awesomeness from here, from her? Let's listen to a little bit of Ella.
Yourself a merry little Christmas, let your heart be light. Next year all our troubles will be out of sight.
Well, I like anything Ella Fitzgerald does, but that album is just wonderful, and that's the kind of Christmas music I can wrap my ears around.
Yes, it's quite enjoining, really. It brings you close to it, I think. A lot of times Christmas music is, well, it's fairly deciduous, right? It's like those trees that are there for a while, leaves come down, they're not those evergreens. But I think that particular album, Ella Wishes You a Swinging Christmas, is certainly a perennial. It just does not go anywhere. Normally a Christmas album for any kind of popular musician is like, too, a stopgap. Almost kind of like, remember in the 1970s, like you'd have an album come out and then you didn't know what to do before the next album, so you'd do a live album. The Christmas music was that before there was a preponderance of live albums. But not for Ella Fitzgerald. She created it as almost really kind of a Noel concept album.
And you know, it's interesting too, because I think so much Christmas music, like, I don't know, so many Christmas movies, Christmas specials, talk about and try to take us to a place that perhaps never really existed, but this one, I don't know, something about it just opens the doors to the house and says, come on in, but it's without the artifice.
That's the real thing, though, about kind of what I think of as the magic of Christmas. It exists and it doesn't exist. Not maybe out there in the corporal world, that Rankin-Bass world that we're accustomed to having presented to us this time of the year and going forward. But it's like, you know, when you watch Miracle on 34th Street, can't say that Santa's not real in that. He is real. I think it's sort of how it exists within your mind's eye, in your heart and your soul, and that's very much the kind of album this is. You can comfortably put this album on in April, and it wouldn't be like someone's walking outside your door and they'd think, oh my goodness, this guy is listening to some Mitch Miller Christmas album. It's crazy. No, it would sound normal. And there aren't a lot of Christmas works like that, just beyond even music. You think about someone like M.R. James. He wrote his ghost stories at Christmas, but they're not really about the holiday per se. I think you can watch the 1951 film Scrooge any time of the year. It's this crazy mashup of noir, gothic, horror, comedy, seasonal, and Beethoven's penultimate piano sonata. It incorporates some aspects of Christmas bells because it completed on Christmas Day, but there aren't really any rock albums, and for jazz, this is not just one of the best Christmas albums, it's one of the best Ella Fitzgerald albums, period.
And one of the things I love about that song, which has been recorded so many times by so many people, is that despite the arrangement of it, of every upbeat one, there's a sadness. And it goes back to the original recording from Meet Me in St. Louis, which was Judy Garland's character trying to cheer up her siblings, but understanding that until then, as the original composition went, we'll have to muddle through somehow.
There's a real Little Women quality to that movie, too, isn't there?
Absolutely.
And it is tinged with that melancholia, just like we see it in Charlie Brown's world, right? And you hear that soundtrack by Vince Guaraldi, where it's these blued sevenths. It's just this very kind of Hank Mobley in a late night mood type of music. And I think we have the days getting shorter. Think about, we tend to think of Halloween is the spirit, the time of the year of ghosts and spirits and everything. But for the English, it was always Christmas, and we have ghost stories, and ghost stories are referenced in our carols. So it makes sense to me that there should be that indigo aspect to her recording there.
We're talking with Colin Fleming here on Downtown. Now, another Christmas album celebrating its 60th anniversary is one of the best-selling Christmas albums, if not the best-selling of all time, Elvis's Christmas album. What makes that a special one and a unique album for you?
Because Elvis could bring the brassy strut like few other people who have ever sang in the history of humankind. People do not understand what a good singer Elvis was. He was a singer who, it became the totality of really a new form of art. And he was not laying back. He was not doing his Christmas album by half measures. He was going for it as hungrily as he went for things when he first got to RCA. This was early in his RCA career, and some of it is so lasciviously double entendred. Listen to like some of the puns in the music, and when he's talking about Santa Claus going down the chimney, and he's covered in sort of like, you are up to some stuff, Elvis. You're not just enjoying a candy cane tonight, are you? So there's that kind of like ribald intensity to it that, I mean, John Lennon said he liked rock and roll because it was about sex. Elvis even makes Christmas about sex.
I bet that's perfect right there. Now, when we came into the segment, we played a little snippet of a wonderful piece that if you could sum up Christmas in one piece, it might be the remarkable Carol Symphony.
Yeah, that's Victor Helly Hutchinson, and he actually died the day after Christmas in his mid-40s. So this is pretty much what he is known for, and it is exactly what its title says it is. It is a symphony comprised of carols, and I love it because there's a collage, modernistic aspect to that. But think about Christmas carols. Think about God Rest Ye Merry Gentlemen. The devil is in that song. I don't mean like in a metaphorical way. He's actually in the song as a character. There are all these minor key melodies. Christmas music, even in upbeat songs, tends to have minor key melodies. Now, I'm not saying it's like Joy Division or anything, but there is always that subdued nature to them for all of their celebration, all of the fealty that they inspire, and that's what you get. It's basically four carols. You have Oh Come All You Faithful, you have God Rest Ye Merry Gentlemen, you have the First Noel, and then you have a kind of matchup of Oh Come All You Faithful again, and Here We Come A-Wassailing. Now, I know you. You're a big wassailing guy up there in Maine.
Oh, yes, yes.
Really enjoy that part. And it's like, if you watch something like the 1951 version of Scrooge, you'll hear these Christmas carols, and then in the middle of them, there'll be these atonal moments, like almost out of late career John Coltrane, like they're dropped into the middle. And I think that comes directly from what we're getting with the Carol Symphony, because it was that mixture, and this leads us into something pretty cool, of the sacred and the profane, and that made for a very different kind of Christmas music.
And then finally, let's listen to a little bit of this, one of the only Christmas songs I can think of that's based on a novel. Let's check out a little bit of The Pogues. We don't have The Pogues. Oh, we don't have it. Never mind. I thought we had it. All right, let's talk about Fairy Tale of New York.
We have the
Bill Murray version, which is a little bit different. Want to listen to that? Can we access that? Here we go.
It was Christmas Eve, babe, in the drunk tank. An old man said to me, won't see another one. And then he sang to me, the red old Mountain Dew.
Well, it's not The Pogues, but I actually like that version a lot from the Very Murray Christmas last year.
Okay, well, music fans, if you don't know that song, don't think that that's it. Go and find the Pogues version with Shane McGowan and Christy McCall. It is, I'm going to say it's the best Christmas song of all time. It is unlike any work of art you will ever experience. And like you said, it takes its title, in a sense, from J.P. Dunleavy novel from 1973. fairy tale for that was actually two words. The Pogues changed it. The Irish do this a lot. James Joyce did it with Finnegan's Wake, which was a ballad. He got rid of the apostrophe, the possessive. And it's a duet of sorts. And we talk about the sacred and the profane. And it starts off in kind of like classic Danny Boy tradition with Shane McGowan singing not quite unaccompanied, but almost. And we're sort of talking about great vocals here today for the most part. We have Elvis, we have Ella. Shane McGowan catches kind of a lot of grief for a lot of different things, I think. But he sings as well as those other two on this song. It is so difficult to hit the notes that he does. It's like, oh, holy night, really. Or if you listen to the beginning of the Beatles, If I Fell, next time you're in the shower, try and sing that to yourself. You'll sound wretched. It is so hard to hit those notes. And the beginning of this song is like that. And then Christy McCall, she joins him. And we get a short story within a pop song that's also a Christmas song where she blames him. They fall in love at first in New York City. Then she blames him for wrecking her life. And they duet. And he calls her a slut and one on heroin at that. And they go back and forth for a while. And you think, what the hell am I listening to? This is like, put on that Feliz Navidad. This is not how Christmas should be. But Shane McGowan was this master at when he's duetting with someone and they finish their line, he could rip the song back to himself in a way that was both kind of like affectionate and definitive. And when you listen to the beginning, it sets a tone because he sings, it's Christmas Eve, babe, in the drunk tank. Like, well, that's not how these things normally start. And he's listening to it. Someone sings a song called The Rare Old Mountain Dew. And he makes it sound like it's this kind of like ballad. But if you actually listen to the song, The Rare Old Mountain Dew, it's like this raving song about going out and drinking lots and lots and lots of whiskey. So you know, just by the way they've kind of transmogrified this song, that we're in a different kind of Christmassy dream space, unlike the literal world.
Let's listen. We've got the original now, and let's listen to a little of the opening.
It was Christmas Eve, babe, in the drunk tank. An old man said to me, won't see another one. And then he sang a song, the rare old mountain dew. I turned my face away and dreamed about you. Got on a lucky one, came in like 10 to 1. I've got a years for me and you. So happy Christmas. I love you, baby. I can see a better time when all our dreams come true.
Queen of New York City.
When the band finished playing, they held out for more. Sinatra was swinging, all the jokes they were singing. We kissed on the corner, then danced through the night. The boys of the NYPD choir were singing, go away, babe. And the bells were ringing out for Christmas Day.
It's a novel in itself right there. It's just incredible.
And what you'll hear in a second is there's an instrumental passage that replicates an Irish Kay Lee, which is very much kind of like the Irish version of the big dance that Fezziwig does in the Christmas Carol. And then at the end, there are these giant, open, ringing chords. When you think about a chord and it's open, it can be so powerful. Like the beginning of Tommy, the Who's rock opera, it starts with one chord and it's just this open sound It says, we're going into a new world. And so as a kind of a Christmas musical pun, there are all these giant, ringing, open chords at the end, this celebration like bells pealing as you make your way through the street. It is the nectar of the Christmas gods.
And I had forgotten the horrible death suffered by Christy McCall. My God, that makes it even more powerful and bittersweet.
Yeah, and it's not like Shane McGowan has ever been the paragon of health himself, although he's still with us. So, yeah, it's very, very unfortunate that she died quite young, and they would do this sometimes live in concert. It was always like a special occasion. I always loved to listen to it on bootlegs. It wasn't just at Christmas that you would get them doing this song, but it also wasn't kind of like some cheap, okay, let's do the hit, you know, like I imagine whenever Christopher Cross does a concert, he has to play Sailing, right? So it wasn't like that. But you knew you were in on something just very enveloping, special, and distinctly Pogesian. That blend, again, that Christmas blend of the sacred and the profane. In life, we can never really, I feel, have anything unless we have its opposite riding shotgun with it. And I think that very notion is just heightened at Christmas.
Absolutely. Well, four great options for your holiday listening pleasure right there. Colin Fleming, who joins us every Tuesday on the program. Colin, thank you so much. We'll do it again next week.
All right. Sounds good.